This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue this morning on Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. On Twitter, if you'd like to hit us up, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. So Josh McDaniels is the new head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders and did not comment on the workout of Colin Kaepernick. Said, like Bill Belichick has done before, we only talk about players that are currently on the team. We bring in players for evaluation and we don't like to publicly comment on them. But boy, oh boy, did people want to figure out how good Colin Kaepernick was. So Kaepernick has not played in the NFL since 2016, and there have been plenty of times where many people have said, boy, it really doesn't make sense that Team A is going in this direction with quarterbacking when Colin Kaepernick doesn't have a job. That was kind of a common thing we heard for many, many, many years. Then it sort of died out a little bit as you started to realize, you know what, it doesn't look like it's going to happen. He's been out of the game way too long. It doesn't feel like any team is interested in him. He's getting to be in his mid-30s, and while still young enough to play, you know, play in this league, he wanted to be a starter. Nobody was interested in him being a starter. Again, the Atlanta Falcons were going to work with him, but he changed all the parameters and rules of the workout so much so that it just ended up being a PR disaster. But in 2022, now there are a number of teams that are looking at Kaepernick and saying, yeah, I'd be interested in seeing him. I'd be interested in working out with him. Remember at a time where his agency and the people that were surrounding Kaepernick would say things like, I've got five or six teams interested, and people sort of laughed at that? Well, I didn't. I was one that said, I wonder if this is true, and nobody wants to admit it. Meaning, privately, they would say to the Kaepernick camp, man, we'd really like to bring you in. We are really interested, but there are some obstacles that we have to hurdles we have to go over within our own organization. And I always felt like that was more of the truth than their camp saying, we've got five or six teams interested in us and no workout was scheduled. I didn't necessarily think that they were lying. Maybe they fudged the numbers a little bit, but I felt like more realistically, it was a couple of teams that said, you don't understand how badly we'd like to see this guy. We kind of want to see. We're in a kind of a pickle here. We think he's got some talents left to give us. But there are certain people within this organization that don't want this to happen. I think that was more of the truth. Good, the bad, and the dumb coming up next. And then we'll explore that as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser!
All right, the Friday edition of The Good, the Bad, and the Dumb as we take you into the holiday weekend. And you know what? It really doesn't matter what weekend we're taking you into. This is The Good, the Bad, and the Dumb. It stands alone. What's the good of the day?
The good of the day. Whether you want to agree with this or not, the answer was still spot on.
Okay.
And that's Shaquille O'Neal. He gets the good of the day because he was asked whether or not he thought professional e-sport athletes were actually athletes.
Okay. I'd like to hear his answer, yeah.
His answer was very thought-provoking. He says he does consider e-sport players to be athletes. He wants to commend those guys. He talked about a show that he used to do, Shaq Versus.
Right.
Where he took on other athletes. He said, you know, hey, he took on Dale Earnhardt Jr., and his body was aching after being in a race car for a little bit. He took on Michael Phelps and realized that, you know what, hey, you know, swimming is 15% physical. All the rest is mental.
Yeah.
And so he does consider esport athletes to be athletes. Or yeah, esport professional players should be athletes.
I guess everybody's athletic definition is a little different. But
yeah,
I'm always one to say, look, if we broaden the term, if like hand-eye coordination, you know, things like that, that's...
Yeah, it involves using your brain a little bit more.
That's usually pretty athletic, so I kind of agree.
Extend it a little bit further. Is, you know, professional chess players like Bobby Fischer, would he be considered an athlete, right? Or,
yeah,
or are we stretching it a little too much?
Now we might be stretching it.
So... I don't know, but I mean, you know, did say, he's like, you guys have a short shelf life too. You guys are only in the sport for like 3 to 5 years. Like,
is that true? You can't be a gamer for like 20 years.
Well, I think you can be a gamer for as long as you want, but I think you know.
Like, if I am a professional Call of Duty player, is my shelf life 3 or 4 years because the competition coming up is so talented? Could I have a 15-year career playing Call of Duty or Rampage?
I have no idea.
Is there a Ms. Pac-Man professional league? Because I think I'd be pretty good at that. I'm good at Ms. Pac-Man.
I think there used to be back in the day.
Man, my kids were never impressed with my Ms. Pac-Man skills at every hotel arcade we ever were at. Never were impressed. They looked at that video game like, oh, it's caveman time.
You go up and down and up and down.
How hard is this?
Side to side.
Eat the strawberry, yeah. Ugh, how difficult is this? Well, yeah, good for Shaq for sort of, you know, kind of
just laying it out there.
Yeah. All right, what's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is... I mean, I think this is something that you might be wanting to explore a little bit more.
Okay.
But there are two professional teams that are about to go on sale.
Oh, okay.
The Seahawks and the Trailblazers.
Oh, okay.
Because
Paul Allen?
Because Paul Allen died.
Yep.
But in his will, he said anything that was in his trust must be sold to fund his passion projects. Meaning... the Trailblazers and the Seahawks must be sold.
What was his passion project?
Oh, I don't know. I have the list of those. Okay. Yeah, there's a bunch of them.
Does he have kids that would technically own this? Is this one of them family legal fights?
It was widely believed that everything was going to be passed along to his sister.
Oh, okay.
Jody Allen. But that turns out not to be the case because of what is explicitly laid out in his will.
So the Seahawks and the Portland Trailblazers are now up for grabs.
Yeah.
So grab a couple of billion and go get one.
Or soon to be.
Yeah.
Soon to be. Up for grabs.
I'd love to see. What was the last? Okay, because the Broncos are up for sale too. And there's like there's been a whole bunch of people coming out and trying to buy the Broncos.
Yeah.
I wonder.
And they're expecting about $4 billion for the Broncos.
Yeah, I was going to say, about $4 billion for the Broncos. What would Seattle? Around the same number?
I would imagine. You know, I mean, there's a lot of issues with the Seahawks, but I don't think that matters. I mean, both of these teams are set up perfectly because, you know, they really did things for the future, for the draft. You know, I mean, just trading away all, like, their best players. But, yeah, I mean, it's an NFL team. We talk about it all the time. You know, this isn't about owning something like buying a business. This is a status.
It really is. It's
that
an amazing
not many people
status.
Get to have.
I know I've said this many times, but you can go back way back where in like the 70s where these things weren't very, very profitable and some teams even lost a little money and owners, it was okay. Like they would be like, look, I have a bunch of businesses. I'm wealthy. I don't mind losing a little money on this if I own the thing in the city. Like there's no business that I own that's quite the same in terms of status as owning the professional team in the city. You know, like you may own a couple of car dealerships. I always bring up car dealerships, but car dealerships are like George Steinbrenner, a shipping company, but cameras aren't going to be in your face all the time like they are when you're the owner of the local professional team. And it does give you some, you know, like an endorphin kick, you know, and it's an elite club. And the fact now that these things print money and there doesn't seem to be an end in sight. I wouldn't say that they're guaranteed to make money forever. I mean, in 100 years, who knows where we are with football? Who knows? But it does seem likely that for a long time, this will just continue to print money for you and your family forever. The values are going to just keep going up. I mean, yeah, to see people who can buy anything that they want not be able to buy this is kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I remember Mark Cuban said that he was single at the time. He's married now with kids, but when he bought the Mavericks, he was single. And he said he bought the biggest house he could find because he didn't want any of his players living in a better house than him. He was the owner of the team. So he bought like this huge mansion for like, it was all by himself. He just bought this huge house because that was the status, you know? It's like, because you can, But you can't buy an NFL team if none are for sale, and you may not get approved, even if you have all the money in the world.
Right.
So, you know, it's something that...
And let's face it, we know that these things don't go up for sale because they want to try to keep it in the family forever.
Of course. Absolutely. The fact that Pat Bowlen's family has been really struggling to figure it out since he died is almost sad.
Yeah. This is a weird one because this is Paul Allen's request.
Yeah.
You know, his dying wish is to say, hey, you know, these passion projects mean more to me than the Trailblazers do or the Seahawks do.
Yep, that's right.
I learned something. I didn't even know he was the owner of the Blazers.
Yeah.
Be honest with you.
If I owned a team, it didn't matter what sport it is. If I owned a team and my kids, I would say, hey, what do you guys want to do with your lives? And, you know, oh, I want to be a doctor, or I want to be a physical therapist, or I want to be... I'd be like, too bad. You're in the business of this.
Yep.
Sorry. I know you have dreams, but your dreams are done. We own the Nashville Predators, and you're in the hockey business now. Because when I die, I don't want you guys going, I never really liked this anyway, so I'm selling it. No. No, that's not how this is going to work.
Nope. Keep it forever.
You guys are going to learn the business. Especially NFL. I mean, like the Hunts and the Maras and the Rooneys,
yes.
Right? I mean, like the first families of the NFL who own these teams, like their kids are like, yep, Steinbrenners in baseball. Like, we own it. We got to learn it because dad doesn't want us to ever sell it ever. So, yeah.
So it should get interesting.
Exactly. All right. What's the dumb of the day?
I got two, and one is more disturbing than the next.
Okay.
I hate both of these, but, you know, I'm going to bring them up. First one is called Period Crunch.
Which is?
A Swedish-based cereal company has made uterus-shaped cereal to normalize period talk at the breakfast table.
No, that's disgusting.
Now, fortunately for us, you cannot buy these in stores, but you can order them to normalize talk.
I don't even know,
how do you sit around in a boardroom one day and go, you know what we should make?
Yeah. What are we doing?
Like, how do you get there?
Right. So. No, I don't want that.
And the next one, the next dub of the day definitely will bother you.
Okay.
All right. Since it is considered public domain, there are certain characters, certain books out there, certain storylines that are considered public domain that people can, you know, just use at their willing.
Right.
So coming to I don't know if it's going to come to a theater near you. I can't imagine this being released in a theater, but it will probably be released somewhere, via some streaming service. You will be able to take in Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey.
I saw this yesterday.
So
the horror movie based on the Winnie the Pooh characters.
Yeah. Based on it, and it really centers around Pooh and Piglet because they decide to go on a rampage after Christopher Robin leaves them behind while he attends college. That they have to fend
enough of this.
Yeah, they have to fend for themselves, and it turns into a bloodthirst revenge.
Ugh. What if this movie's actually pretty decent? What,
I want to refuse that it is.
I do too.
I don't know. Awful. I mean, I saw this. I was like, I can't believe this is a thing.
Well, you know what? I think the idea probably came from the Christopher Robin movie. Did you see the Christopher Robin movie?
Yes, I did, with Ewan McGregor.
Ewan McGregor, there's like a scene where he's just yelling at Winnie the Pooh for being annoying.
Right.
Like, he's so stressed. And then somebody probably watched that and went, you know, if I was Pooh, I would have turned around and kicked that guy right in the...
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't have taken this from Christopher Robin. So he probably said, what if Winnie the Pooh had a dark side? And then just sort of morphed it and just sort of went, and let's just... No ideas are bad ideas, people. Let's throw it out on the table. And everybody was like, what if Piglet had, like, horns and a tusk? And he was like, nope, no idea is a bad idea. Let's write it down. Let's get this done. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Fortunately for us, too, Jim Cummings will not be voicing this version of Woody the Pooh.
We had Jim Cummings on the show years ago.
Yes, we did.
Exactly.
Father's Day, I think, wasn't it last year or 2 years ago?
Yeah, it was a couple years ago. He wrote a book about fathers and whatnot, and we had him on the show. Real quick, Patton Oswalt, the comedian, has a very funny bit that he does that's related to this, where he talks about a movie called Deathbed, The Bed That Eats People. And he talks about it, but he talks about it in a way I've never thought about movies before. And what he said was, because sometimes you see a really bad movie and you go, oh, this is a bad movie. Everyone who's involved should be embarrassed. But the way Oswald talks about Deathbed, The Bed That Eats People, is that he reminds you that people woke up at 5 a.m. and brewed coffee. They built sets. They brought in food. They fixed cameras. They edited. They scored it. Like, there's a whole bunch of people that worked on these awful, awful, awful movies. And when you think about it, it's like, and they had to be somewhat enthusiastic about it, right? Like, somewhere, like a director, producer, actors, like at some point, there has to be a feeling like, nah, I'm all in. Like I'm all in. And when I see this Winnie the Pooh horror movie, I think to myself of everybody that had to build costumes and masks and sets. And at some point, they all had to be like, nah, I'm in. I'm in on this. Whatever this is going to be, I'm in.
When they first got the script and they're doing their table read. And I mean, that's what I'm picturing too. That when they're doing the table read and they're just kind of figuring it all out, and you got directors, yeah, producers, everyone with notebooks,
right?
And you know, it's like the very first line is like, "All right, this is you know, day one of Winnie the Pooh, blood and honey table read." Yeah, I mean, at that point, you go, "Huh, am I doing?"
Does it sit in the actor where he goes, "Wait a minute, hold on, my agent kind of was fuzzy on the details. Did you say Winnie the Pooh, blood and honey? What exactly is this?"
Yeah. I must have read this wrong.
Exactly. And it's like the writer is like, he either wrote this like, this is brilliant, this is a masterpiece, I can't wait, and he just stayed up all night writing it out. Or at some point he wrote it and went, what am I doing? You know what? I'm finishing this. I don't care.
Yeah.
And he just got it done. He got to the finish line.
Well, the author of the article, what I love to, he brought up, he said, man, I'm all in on this. What if we have like Dr. Seuss slasher films or a House of Horrors version of Willy Wonka?
Yeah,
and I
right.
thought about that. I'm like, you know what? The original Willy Wonka, the Gene Wilder version of is kind of a House of Horrors.
It is. It is. I mean, a girl chewed gum and blew up to the size of a large blueberry. And then and Mike TV was shrunken down where he could have been stepped on.
Yes.
And Augustus Gloop was sent through the pipes to the incinerator. Luckily, it wasn't turned on that day.
Right. So, I mean, all you got to do is change a few words and go, oh,
no, I'm sorry. That was Veruca Salt.
That's right.
Was sent to the incinerator, luckily. Augustus Gloop was sent to the fudge room.
Yeah.
Wasn't he?
Yes, he was sent to the fudge room.
His mother was like, oh, they're going to make a little chocolate. Oh, yeah, go get him. Go save him. Oh, God. Yeah. But if you could see a horror movie with that, it would be kind of wild.
I know.
So, all right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. Winnie the Pooh, blood and honey. Oh, God. That's funny. All right, it's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. We're gonna have Jeff Hammond on to the Coca-Cola 600. We talked to him earlier this week just to give yet another preview of the race. So Colin Kaepernick worked out with the Raiders. So I'm going to ask this question in all honesty. Do you think that the current state of the news in our country, Colin Kaepernick has been fighting for the social causes he's fighting about. He is warned about police brutality, things like that. And he's knelt for the national anthem and people didn't like that. And he became a very polarizing figure. But I'm going to ask this honestly. Do you think that the state of affairs like George Floyd's death 2 years ago and sort of the protests that went around the country had made some in the NFL go, yeah, maybe he had a point. And now he's not as controversial as he was for all of the years he was kept out of the league? Like, to me, that's the way I answer the question, why today? Because when I hear people say Colin Kaepernick is getting a workout and all these teams are interested in him because he can still help a team. What, now? At 34 years old? What did he?
I don't agree with that.
3 months ago that he didn't know?
I don't see how he can help out a team.
I don't either. I don't think he's going to end up on any team. Well, he might end up on a team, but I think it's just because somebody's going to go, yeah, we'll sign him. But when I hear people say, oh, I think he can help. Like, look at the quarterback situation now in the NFL, and he would be a very good backup. He would have been a good backup any of the years he was out of this league. Let's be honest. Take the social justice stuff out and the controversy of the kneeling for the anthem out. I know it's a passionate passionate stand for a lot of people. It's a lot of people said that they didn't want anything to do with the NFL because players were kneeling for the national anthem. But take that away. Take that away for a second. Take away the controversy. Was he so terrible that he could not get a backup role? He couldn't get a third string job in this league at any point? It took 2022 for teams to go, yeah, we're interested in you.
God, was there a waiting period the NFL put out in a secret memo?
Right, exactly. Or
cannot touch him for the next 5 years.
Or did teams start getting permission from the right people that said, oh, yeah, it's okay now? Come on, 32 teams would not touch this guy at all. In their most dire need for a quarterback, backup quarterback, they never called this guy. Never. I know a lot of it was self-inflicted. Do not get me wrong on this. A lot of it was self-inflicted. Let me tell you something. I thought what he did down in Georgia was a disaster. I thought it was a mess. Trying to work out and then changing the venue of the workout. I thought it was a mess. If I was a team, I would say, look, I was interested, but you clearly want to do things your way to a point where we're just not ready for this. We're not ready for this. But here's the other thing too, all right? Do you want the Colin Kaepernick of years ago, or do you want a Colin Kaepernick that doesn't say anything anymore? Do you want a Colin Kaepernick that doesn't speak out on a school shooting? Do you want a Colin Kaepernick that doesn't speak out about any sort of injustice that he sees? Do you want him to? Because here's the thing. If he's on your team and he's a backup quarterback holding a clipboard, even if he's a third string quarterback that doesn't dress, you know the media is going to go to him every time there's something going on in the news, and there's always something going on in the news. So if you're a team, are you willing to let that, are you willing to let that take place? Do you want that to take place? Has sort of the societal culture changed enough that teams are not afraid of a third string quarterback getting all the microphones because he's talking about something that went on somewhere in the country that has us rattled? Think about that for a second, because I think that's what I think a lot of teams were afraid of.
Listen, I feel that it'll be the case even if he's, a practice squad quarterback.
Right.
Not even on the official roster, not even traveling with the team. That's going to happen.
It's not an apples to apples comparison. I like to say that a lot because it's true. But remember when Tebow would go to the Jets or the Eagles or the Patriots, mm-hmm. and there'd be 500 media members there surrounding him? And you're like, this is a guy that's trying to buy. He's trying to get a practice squad job. And there's 50 reporters around this guy.
Yeah, but what's the story? The story is, man, if we can get that one soundbite.
Right, exactly.
That one clip where, everyone's all eyes are going to be on us.
And again, it goes back to Kaepernick. Kaepernick's your backup quarterback. He's third string quarterback, right? Like, let's say you're the Raiders and you go, all right, we'll sign you. We got Derek Carr, we got Jared Stidham, and now we got you, okay? And let's say there is an issue that is brought up in the country, God forbid. And everyone goes, that's something Colin Kaepernick was talking about a couple of years ago. Let's go find him. And next thing you know, he's becoming the center for something that's non-football related. He's becoming sought after for his social justice thoughts. If you're a team, do you say, we're cool with that now? Because it appeared to me no one was cool about it for a long time. And now suddenly in 2022, they're cool about it. All right, Jeff Hammond from Fox Sports is going to join us. Talk Coca-Cola 600. Had it earlier this week. It's Wake Up Call continues.
are listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, so we got a Memorial Day tradition. The Indianapolis 500, and then, of course, the Coca-Cola 600. One of the bigger races on the NASCAR schedule. It's certainly the longest. And for years and years, it's been one of the more important races on the calendar. Not Daytona 500, but still on a very, very high level. Jeff Hammett from Fox Sports joining us to preview that race and the season so far in NASCAR. How are you, my friend? Thanks for joining us again.
Tony, it's a privilege to be on your show, and really looking forward to talking about what's been going on so far during this season of 2022 and the new car and everything that's been happening around the track.
All right, so let's talk about this season, because 11 different drivers have won this season. Only two have won twice, William Byron and Ross Chastain. That's parity. Is that good so far? I mean, do we like it when we have a Kyle Larson winning a lot of races, or a Jeff Gordon from the 90s winning a lot of races? Or has this sort of been rather interesting to see different drivers winning?
Well, we've been talking about the young talent coming along and challenging the veterans, and I think this year we're seeing that start to happen. William Byron, Ross Chastain, young, hard-charging kids that have struggled in recent years, have now found their way into victory lane, multiple times, and they're up there competing each and every week. I think that it's exciting. I think the fans are starting to connect with some of these younger talents and recognizing that, NASCAR has got a new look to it, which has been really great for TV as well as for the grandstands. I mean, Charlotte Motor Speedway announced last night that, they're a sellout. And so that's huge. I mean, that's like be over 100,000 people this weekend at Charlotte Motor Speedway for the Coca-Cola 600. So I think a lot of things are contributing, including the new car. But this new talent, I think, is starting to turn heads.
Let's talk about the next-gen car. In layman's terms, what makes it different? What makes it part of what this season has delivered so far?
Tony, the easiest way to say everything. It's a total, redirection as far as NASCAR is concerned. It is not the old, and this is serious when I say this, it's not our 1950 technology with a truck rear end housing and the way the front end is designed on it. It has independent suspension, just like some of these hot rods are running up down the street in nowadays. Rack and pinion steering, sequential transmission. The aero underneath the car works to help make the car stick to the racetrack better, a new wheel, a wider and taller tire. I mean, all these things are revolutionary when it comes to what NASCAR has used, the way they used to look. I mean, we've got a new face on what we consider our Cup Series this year, and everybody is having to adjust, and the learning curve has been, steep, and because of the drivers. The 11 different new drivers, I think it kind of proves that not everybody's got it figured out. I mean, some of the veterans like, Denny Hamlin and Kyle Larson, they haven't been able to work their magic like they have in the past. And, some of these younger kids have figured it out quicker, or they've gotten lucky, however you want to look at it. But in the long run, we've got a totally different animal that each and every week, and this weekend is no different. You mentioned longest race of the year. This is the ultimate test, and I think the final test, on this new car to see how it handles everything.
Let's talk about the Coca-Cola 600, because it used to be sort of a showcase of the engineers, right? Like the engines and the design of the car, and can the car hold up through 600 miles? As technology has gotten better, that's sort of gone a little bit by the wayside. So how do you see a 600-mile race today with a car like the next-gen car?
A little bit more like a throwback race, to which your point is. There are some areas that are still in question to see how they handle it, and I'm talking about the new car itself. I think the engines are pretty much bulletproof unless guys, get crazy with, little late, tuning or something as far as the 600 is concerned, and or the transition from day to night if something doesn't quite jive right there. I think more importantly is to see how the teams are able to keep up with the new design of the chassis and the aero balances that are really going to be the biggest, I think, threat this weekend. We saw at Texas, racetrack's a little bumpy. you got this car on the edge, it would get away from a lot of these drivers. And we saw crashes, some pretty hard crashes, might add also. I think the same thing could happen this weekend because of fatigue and having to wrestle this race car. This is not an easy race car to drive. You have to work at it, and these drivers are really being challenged because it's so sensitive. And, you know, you make little air pressure adjustments, and the car responds in a different manner. Weather, heat, all this stuff right here will come into play this weekend. I think that it's going to be a different look, but it's really going to be man versus machine versus the elements.
What is more concerning for a driver in the Coca-Cola 600? Is it the physicality of the race in terms of what you were talking about, wrestling the car, keeping the car, or is it the mental part, staying focused for a long, long time on the racetrack?
I believe it's going to be the mental part, because if you just get relaxed at the wrong time, or if you miss your mark just a little bit, this car, you know, can jump out from under you in a heartbeat, and it'll bite you. And next thing you know, you'll be, you know, swapping ends and up in either end of the wall, or somebody will be into you. I think the mental part's going to be the toughest. When you go back, I think the shortest race we've ever had at Charlotte was 3 hours and 58 minutes, which is unheard of. The average race time is 4 hours and 30 minutes. So you've got to get behind it. You think about going and getting in your car and driving 4 hours and 30 minutes and focusing every 100 feet that you're going down that road to make sure you don't make a mistake. I mean, that's about what it's like. You're going to be sitting behind that wheel. You got to be watching the competition around you. You got to be watching the track to know where you are on the racetrack. You got to make pit stops. There are going to be, I think, a lot of mistakes made on pit road. I think pit road is going to be the defining moment. We got to make more pit stops than ever before. They have 13 sets of tires that they can go through. And I look for them to use them up. And then all these open that mental, as you might say, conditioning. Who is prepared? Who is going to be rested? Who's going to be able to do this and not make a mistake along the way?
I do want to ask you about the All-Star race. I thought it was very interesting. Twitter's not always the best place to go to get the answers, but I saw Twitter. I watched the race, and then I saw Twitter just blow up with people going, what is NASCAR doing with this late caution? Why isn't Ryan Blaney the winner? You've been around the sport a long time. You've seen situations like this where there is a last lap situation. A flag has to come out, but was it the right call at the right time as Blaney was right just about to cross the line before the yellow came out?
Okay, first and foremost, make sure everybody understands, for the All-Star race, the final lap has to be completed under green. Under any other race conditions, it's like here if we went to Coca-Cola 600 and that same scenario was happening, and here comes Blaney and he's coming to the start-finish line, and the caution comes out, he would automatically be the winner because they freeze the field.
Got it. Okay.
But on Sunday night, he was coming to the start-finish line. They did throw the caution, and I've got to give NASCAR credit. They have owned this mistake. They were premature. It was not necessary to throw the caution. There was a situation that could have been the reason, but it was just a quick reflex that the guy calling the race, as far as controlling the caution flag situation, he did it, and then once he did it, they couldn't take it back. And I said they got to do a better job of working on that and, you know, having a situation like that and determining, is it necessary, especially that close to the end of the race? That's something they wouldn't, you know, have any kind of reservations about during a regular procedure during the course of the race. But in that case, like you pointed out, man's like 100 foot from the start-finish line. There was no reason. The racetrack wasn't blocked. It wasn't like it had, you know, 10 cars sitting there on the back straightaway. But they owned it. NASCAR has come out and said, we blew that one, and we've got to do a better job.
That's interesting. What a tough position to be in, because there are obvious times, like you said, where there's like a 10-car pileup. You got to throw the caution. It's dangerous out there. But then there are other times where it's on the edge, and you've got to make a call of whether or not you should enact a safety measure in an auto race. That's got to be a really kind of precarious situation at times.
It's a huge responsibility. It really is. And that individual has to recognize very quickly, what do we have here? Multiple cars? Single car? Is the car still moving? Where is it at in proximity to the leader and the lead cars? How much traffic's coming by them? Is it, like I say, is the car stopped? All of these things, you've got to look at it, you've got to recognize the situation, and you've got to react to it. And so just try to understand, yes, they made a mistake. They called it, you know, probably prematurely, but at the same time, it's in the interest of safety. Now, the good thing about it is that was a wrong. And in the end, it took him two times, but the right guy won the race.
Right, I agree completely. Yeah. Could they have allowed Ryan Blaney an opportunity to go into the pits and get that window net up instead of doing it himself? Could they have said, look, it's the All-Star race. We can kind of make it up as we go along here. Go in, get your window net on. We understand why you took it down. Get it on. Get back on the track.
This again, is an unusual situation. And they could have. They really could have, because it is an All-Star race. Everybody understands the circumstances. I don't think anybody begrudges Ryan Blaney for him reacting like he did. I think one of the other things that came out of this, in my opinion, is NASCAR needs to overemphasize back to the drivers and the crew chiefs that drivers, even though you're excited, you've got to keep your safety equipment intact until you're safely, we're down, you know, the racetrack is under control, and you're down to a safe speed, and we know the race is completed. You can't allow your you know, emotions to possibly put you in harm's way. And I think that's one of the things that they need to go back and reemphasize. You know, like starting this weekend, this, hey guys, stay buckled up, leave your winning net up, leave everything alone until we get the race under control. And that means the whole field is slowed down. And this race is concluded completely before you start doing stuff like that.
Jeff Hammond, Fox Sports, Coca-Cola 600 coming up on Sunday. All right, one final question. I remember a time where there was sort of this crown jewel of racing. There was different races, Southern 500, Daytona 500, Coca-Cola 600. But now there's all sorts of different ways. There's the new dirt race, and there's all sorts of different racing. And now there's a playoff, of course. Coca-Cola 600, does it still carry that same level of prestige?
Yes, sir. It always will, and it will never change. I mean, you know, just because we get better at something, just because we add some more bells and whistles, it's still what it is. I mean, it's like, to me, it's like running the Kentucky Derby. Churchill Downs will always be the premier horse race in horse racing. And to me, the Coca-Cola 600 at Charlotte Motor Speedway will always be a defining moment, especially on Memorial Day weekend, when they go hand in hand with the Indianapolis 500. Those two races are iconic and legendary, and I don't think you will ever see them be challenged for their right in the season and their value to their particular series.
Yeah, and it was the first win for Jeff Gordon in his illustrious career back in 94. So,
and it kicked. This race actually has a lot of first-time winners, and Jeff Gordon is probably the most defining moment in his career and what turned out to be an unbelievable one for him.
We love having you on, Jeff. Thank you so much for your time this morning. Good luck with watching and calling the race this weekend. Appreciate it, my friend.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it.
You got it. Jeff Hammond, Fox Sports. Again, Coca-Cola 600 coming up this weekend. One of the best races that you get on the calendar. It's a good tradition. And again, I know some of you are not motorsports fans, but if you are, you know what the Sunday of Memorial Day is. Indy 500, of course, the NASCAR race down in Charlotte, the 600-miler. All right, we'll come back as we get ready to wrap up Hour 2 and head into Hour 3 on Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks to Jeff Hammond, Fox Sports, and the Coca-Cola 600 coming up this weekend. Indy 500 before that, so again, a weekend of motorsports action, if that's your thing. And if you're not, Major League Baseball and, of course, NBA action this weekend. Maybe we get a Game 7 in the East, but maybe it's wrapped up tonight and there is no NBA action until we have Game 1 of the NBA Finals. If you got a weekend project coming up, and if you do and you need some help, Free All Deep Penetrating Oil can help you with those universal rusted joints, pillow blocks, corroded U-bolts, rusted machine screws, axle nut removal, whatever it may be. Freol can help because it delivers three times more lubricant, so it takes less spray, less torque, and less time than any other penetrating oil to get the job done. And it is also body shop safe, which means it's safe on paint, plastic parts, and silicone free. Give Freol Deep Penetrating Oil a try. You are going to love it. You can find it on the shelves of AutoZone, O'Reilly, Napa Auto Parts Store, and select Walmart stores. Again, for when you need less spray, less torque, and less time, Freol Deep Penetrating Oil. All right. So
is tonight's game good? Is it going to be good?
Gee, I wonder. You know what? I wonder. Every single game in this series has had that one moment where the other team goes, we're done. Bye. Whether it's early, third quarter, or whatever. And we have yet to get a real solid back and forth, you know, kind of contest.
I mean, it was like, the same in the Western Conference. I mean, we had some great matchups before the first round and second round. Some like games that just came down to the wire. And these all feel like, you know, just business as usual. Like, you know, the Warriors just plowed right through. Like, oh, this is what we're going to do.
Why do I feel like the safe bet is blowout, comfortable lead, comfortable win?
Yeah.
Like, where is the 1 minute down by two with the ball? Like, where is – we haven't – can't remember. Boston, Brooklyn game one?
Maybe.
Is that it? Am I missing one?
Did the NCAA tournament take up all of them?
Yeah, I know.
Because there was a bunch of them. Remember that Sweet 16?
That's right. That's right. Good point. Good point. We'll talk about the Western Conference Finals as we continue. Thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's, of course. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.